You may have heard him chatting to my colleague Jason Jandu a couple of weeks back, but I'm delighted to say Mr. Howard Jones joins me on the line now. Morning, Howard. How are you?
I'm great, thanks, Nick. How are you?
Very, very good indeed. Good. I'm trying to think. We spoke, if I remember, just about a year ago when you were getting ready to play the Union Chapel. But you're just about to kick off another tour, aren't you?
Yes, that's right. I've kind of turned it into a sort of annual thing because I had such a great time last year, you know, going around the country and sitting at the piano and playing songs, telling a bunch of stories. And, you know, it's one of those quite enjoyable experiences for me. So we thought we would do it again this year. And it's going really well. Thanks.
I know that you have done festivals, the whole 80s festival scene, and you've done that with your full band, and you've also toured with your full band. But this must be quite a different experience because it's just you, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it gets me back to you know, the songs, and in a way, it sort of forces me to sort of reinterpret them really for a solo instrument. And what I find is each time I come back to them, I can sort of pull something different out of them and give them a different twist and maybe, you know, change the tempo or... and there's always some sort of new story coming that I just happen to remember about why it was written or, you know, circumstances that around, surrounding things. What I love about it is it brings me back to basics, gets me, you know, really playing the piano and having to really, you know, deliver the songs vocally. And it's great.
In a way, is this how your career started off? You, synthesizer or keyboards, and an audience.
Yeah. I've been asked quite a lot about that recently. You know, why everything was always so much solo. When I came back from music college, I was in music college up in Manchester. I came back to High Wycombe, got a job in a first job that anybody offered me in a factory, and I had this idea to do a one-man electronic show, but I was hoping to work with other people, but there was nobody around who I knew who could join the band with me. So I thought, right, I'm going to have to do this on my own. I'm going to have to sing the songs myself. I'm going to have to, you know, orchestrate the music with all these amazing drum machines and synthesizers that had just become available. And so, but it was basically sort of me and Jed, and Jed was doing the dancing side of it. He was creating these characters that went along with the music. So I very much got used to dealing with an audience on my own and involving them in the whole, you know, the whole evening, because if I couldn't turn around to one of my band members for support, I had to rely on the audience supporting me. So I think something, you know, happened right back in those early days that made me feel confident about doing shows on my own.
I wonder if, in a way, this is self-perpetuating, because the more you do shows like this, the more you tour, the more stories there are to tell, so the more tours you'll have to do to tell the stories.
Yeah, well, I had an idea for this tour that I would ask the fans if they had any song they particularly wanted me to do, that to tell me which show they were coming to, what song they'd like me to play, and why that song meant so much to them. And honestly, there's a whole sort of several tours worth of material there, because people's stories about why the songs, you know, meant so much to them. It's just incredible. So I've been, you know, working my way through all these emails, and I'm going to, you know, be at least a couple of those stories I'm going to be talking about during the show.
I'm as guilty as probably most people on the radio in often playing the hits and the ones that stuck out for me when I was listening on my Walkman to your music for the first time. But presumably, you don't just reach a point where you stop making music. You must still be writing material.
I'm still writing, and recently I've been asked to write some songs for films. So that's been an interesting experience. I mean, I wrote a couple of songs for the Eddie the Eagle film. And it's interesting that when you have, you know, a script and a narrative, and then the song has to describe that in some way, I found that quite, you know, relatively easy to, once you've got a really great story, to then create a song from that, you know, sort of came quite easily to me. And then I've been asked to write another song for an American animated film that's coming out, I think, next year, called Animal Crackers, and they asked me to write for a specific scene in that film. So I don't know why this has suddenly happened to me, but I've suddenly been writing, you know, songs associated with films. So I'm going to continue that idea and finish the album, thinking, even, you know, imagining that I was writing for a scene in a film, and bringing out a story in the song in that way.
The Eddie the Eagle story is a great one, but I wonder, would you ever give that a go? Would you ever try ski jumping?
No, I wouldn't. No, I'm not physically gifted in any way, and I totally admire the heroism of people who do, but I it's not for me. I'm sure I would make a complete disaster of that.
I don't know. You see it on telly and you see some of the injuries, and I sit there and think, they must be absolutely mad. But then I imagine there's people sat there seeing you going on stage in front of an audience, just you and a piano, and they must think you're mad to do that.
Yes, exactly. I've had that thought many times. That people must think, oh, man, he must be just insane, just go out there on his own and play. But, you know, it is what I do, and I've been playing the piano since I was seven. It's like walking and breathing to me. But still, you know, there's a healthy amount of fear, you know, that accompanies it when you step out on the stage. You think, oh, is this the night that it's all going to go horribly wrong, and, you know, I'm going to forget everything, and, you know, that all those fears still go through you. But you just, you know, you ride through it and you come out, and at the end of the night it seems to have been okay and people seem to be happy.
I went just this weekend to the album launch of one of our local bands, and they were telling me about recording and recording things as live, and how that little bit of fear brought out the best performance. And I guess that must be the case for you, because you were certainly on fire when I saw you last time at the Union Chapel.
I think you know that, you know, when you've got the adrenaline pumping through you, and also, I mean, I think the environment does affect you as well. I mean, that is such a beautiful venue, and when you make a sound in there, it just reverberates around the room in such a beautiful way. That really helps, you know, to give you confidence to, because I think the more relaxed that you are, even though there's a lot of adrenaline pumping around, the more relaxed you are, the audience feel more comfortable. The more comfortable they feel, the more they can enjoy it. So I'm always trying to make sure that I don't, you know, give out sort of this sort of nervousness that the audiences pick up on, because they're so perceptive. So making them feel relaxed is first priority.
I think from the audience point of view, it's a place where you can feel relaxed and comfortable as well. I know there's the bar upstairs, but in the auditorium you can get yourself a mug of hot chocolate with a few marshmallows or something and sit there, and it's very cozy and you're very close to the stage, very close to the performance, I think. Do you play the organ, Howard?
In my first band, when I was at school still, my drummer in the band, his father owned an electric organ, so we used to borrow it and take it, you know, in the van to these, you know, pretty grotty gigs, and sort of try and wrap it in blankets so we didn't scratch it and make a mess of it. And so I did, you know, in those very early days, because I was a huge fan of Keith Emerson. So, you know, he he had a Hammond L100 when he started off in the NICE before he went on to ELP. And so that was always the holy grail. But I could never afford or get anywhere near Hammond L100. But that was always the organ that you wanted to play. I also had some relatives who were caretakers in a chapel in Swansea in Wales, and one day they let me have a go on the huge pipe organ in the chapel, and it was I can still remember the experience. It was the most incredible sound, and I was only young, but they trusted me to play there, and I think that had a huge impact on me, in terms of how amazing the keyboards could sound and how you could fill this big space with this incredible, powerful sound. So yes, that's my connection.
Well, I'm just thinking about the Union Chapel, which you're playing on the 28th of March, and there at the Union Chapel, did you see that fabulous pipe organ they have there?
Yes, it's amazing, isn't it?
And you know what I thought when I was last there? I thought, wouldn't it be amazing to hear Howard Jones playing the keys and the pedals of that organ? I'm not sure if we'd be able to see you, because I think the console's tucked behind. So we maybe wouldn't be able to see you. But I thought, I bet Howard Jones could make that organ make a wonderful noise. So that is my dream one day, to hear you play the organ at the Union Chapel.
I remember going to see Emerson, Lake and Palmer at the Albert Hall, and Keith Emerson did play the organ there at the Albert Hall, and that was amazing, amazing. We'll never forget that. Well, maybe I should explore that idea sometime in the future.
At least ask them if you can have a go. Yeah. I'd love to hear that. The tour kicks off for you in what, a week's time. You start touring. Is there much you need to get ready?
Yes, there is. I'm starting to panic a bit because, as I was saying to you, people have been writing into me, requesting songs, and some of them I have never played live before. So I'm frantically trying to learn them and making sure I do a good job. I've got my work cut out.
And I see already a lot of the shows are selling out. There's still tickets available for the Union Chapel, but you tour the UK and then you're off to the States.
We're doing festivals during the summer, and then I've got a headlining tour in the States during July and August, which I'm really looking forward to. We're playing all the big sort of outdoor venues, and I'm really looking forward to that, because I've actually expanded my band now, my main electric band, and we're a five piece now, with Robin, who's been my long-term guitarist. He joins the band, and then Emily Nolan Davis is going to do electronic percussion and backing vocals. And so, it's going to be an expanded band, and that's always exciting for me to work with more musicians. It's going to be great.
Well, we're looking forward here at Miskin Radio for the Union Chapel show on Tuesday, the 28th of March. Howard, thanks ever so much for chatting to us this morning. I wish you all the very best for the tour, and hope we'll speak again as you keep touring. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Nick. Great talking to you.
Thank you, Howard, very much. Well, here is one of the songs that was certainly on my Walkman, going round and round and round. One of the great things is you can go to howardjones.com. You can see some of these videos. You can relive the moments. And, of course, you can find all details about the tour and that show at London's Union Chapel. It's a great venue. It's going to be a great show. Just Howard Jones, a keyboard, some stories and some songs. 28th of March.